You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is The Morning Show with Eric Clay on Mondays. This is the Made of Clay Mondays version, and our guest this morning is Christopher Zarkey. Christopher, it's good to have you here.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
And we will get to know you in a minute. Do you want to just give us a one or two sentence summary of who you are for the lead-in? We're going to cut to some music, but yeah.
Who I am? I'm the oldest of seven from a family in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Uncle to 18, cousin to 43, and
Holy
I work as a chaplain at Cayuga Medical Center, and I'm associate priest at St. John's Episcopal Church in Ithaca.
And that is a good bullet point, and we have more in common than you could possibly know. I'm the seventh of eight, sixth of seven surviving. So lots of things. Okay. Anyway, we're going to switch to Everything Possible by Fred Small, and I'm going to let you comment on after we finish listening to
it. Okay. Great.
We have cleared off the table the leftovers saved. Wash the dishes and put them away. I have told you a story and tucked you in tight at the end of your knockabout day. As the moon sets its sails to carry you to sleep over the midnight sea, I will sing you a song no one sang to me. May it keep you good company. You can be anybody you want to be. You can love whomever you will. You can travel any country. You can travel any country where your heart leads. And know I will love you still. You can live by yourself. You can live by yourself. You can gather friends around. You can choose one, the special one, and the only measure, and the only measure of your words and your deeds will be the love you leave behind when you're gone. There are girls who grow up strong and bold. There are boys quiet and kind. Some race on ahead, some follow behind, some go in their own way and time. Some women love women, some men love men, some raise children, some never do. You can dream all the day, never reaching the end of everything possible for you. Don't be rattled by names, by taunts, by games, but seek out spirits true. If you give your friends the best part of yourself, they will give the same back to you. You can be anybody you want to be. You can love whomever you will. Sing it with us. You can travel any country where your heart beats, and know I will love you still. You can live by yourself. You can gather friends around. You can choose one special one, and the only measure of your words and your deeds will be the love you leave behind when you're done. The love you leave behind when you're done.
And that's Everything is Possible by Fred Small. And you're listening to The Morning Show, Made of Clay Mondays. And our guest this morning is Christopher Zarkey. And I got the... Is that the correct pronunciation
that is,
of your last
that
name?
Is.
Good.
Yeah, that's a Hungarian name.
That's what I was going to say. That's got to be Hungarian with that. Yeah. But good, good. So, Christopher, tell us a little bit more. Why is that song important to you?
I grew up in northern Minnesota, primarily in a town of 366.
A village.
Yeah. Where everyone's roles were pretty set, pretty expected. People either took over their parents' farms or their parents' businesses. Out of my class, which had 26, only two of us went on to college. Of the girls in my class, all were married or had a child by the time they were 19.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I love this song because there are just so many possibilities in life, and I affirm the life choices that my peers made because it was right for them. And
it's what they did.
Right,
and you can't
really
knock what people do when that's what they perceive their choices are.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. I grew up in a town of actually on a farm outside of a town of 1,000. The next nearest house was about half a mile away, and the one after that was a mile away. So isolation, rural isolation.
Right.
But this town was a progressive town, and 75% of the kids went to college in 1969, or at least two-thirds, but close to three-quarters. And by 1979, less than a third would go to college. And this was the oil embargo. This was the beginning of the stuff leading up to the farm crisis that exploded in 1980s. And there was a village next door, about 10 miles away, where the statistics were more near your own statistics. It was, and you can tell where people's hopes, they hold their heads a little lower. They don't look quite so far out. They don't see the horizon because it's not available to them, and you can't see what you can't perceive as being possible.
Right.
So, wow. Powerful. So tell me, one of the ways I like to get to know people is for you to just describe a little bit of who you are and what experiences or experience has shaped. Tell me about an experience that has really shaped your life.
I think back to college. I went to college at St. Cloud State, Minnesota, which is 80 miles northwest of Minneapolis. And at that time, my friend Edie Regan was the pastoral minister at the Newman Center, the Catholic community. And Edie currently lives in Ithaca. She's been here for about 25 years. She's a chaplain at Hospicare. So I met her when I was an 18-year-old college student, and she took me on a mission trip to inner city Chicago, where we helped out at the shelters with homeless people. So coming from northern Minnesota, where homelessness was not something that I saw, it was pretty mind-blowing and just helped me realize that there was a lot more in the world that I could respond to,
right,
in addition to the rural poverty that I was seeing growing up.
Right, and when you come from a rural area, sometimes, I mean, for me, the inappropriate assumption was that everybody in a city has resources. It's just that the rural people
are
poor.
Right.
So how has that shaped what you do now?
It shaped me by paying attention to what isn't seen on the surface, by asking the questions, by listening to the stories. And as chaplain at the medical center, I just take a lot of time listening to people's stories and realizing what people's hopes are, what their dreams are, what their concerns are.
Yes. A lot of people don't realize chaplains who've gone through clinical residencies are trained to look at the way people structure their stories so that they can see both what's being said and what's not being said.
Right.
And they can, and it's like, it should not be confused with therapy or counseling, but it should be thought of as a conversation with a close friend. And that quality of friendship, which is at the heart of professional chaplaincy these days, is missing in most of our professionalized world.
I agree with that, right.
So it's to know that you can have a conversation across profound differences with no assumption that there's any effort to other than understanding and to figure out what the patient in the hospital is seeking. So tell me, what sorts of things do you do to kind of give your life a little texture, a little amusement outside of your work in the parish at St. John's or at the Cayuga Medical Center?
Right. Well, I moved here last June from Atlanta, where I graduated from seminary.
So you've got another year and a half to actually make the transition in terms of how people live into moves.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
I love the natural beauty of this area. I go hiking at the state parks generally three times a week. My favorite one so far has been Taganic Falls. I love the change in seasons and being connected to that again. Mm-hmm. So every time I go hiking, it's a different experience, depending on if it's raining or snowing or the wind is blowing or if it's really hot.
Mm-hmm. Would this be a good time to go to Love of the Land?
That would be great.
Okay, so this is Rhiannon and Love of the Land.
It's the last train home, crossing the plains in the dawn. Moon and sun, both sitting on the crest of the hill. I sigh a breath, surrender to
in the dust, fast, light, barefoot. Pastures, cows, horses, they let me sing to them. Twilight, lightning bugs, all the critters singing. The night so dark. There's magic in that dark, all the crops are growing. And the dawn so then all the work begins again. Everybody works. That's how it is. There is a cruelty to this life, a loneliness, a separation from the rest of humanity. You have got to fit in here. This cultural monotony. It's a stolen Indian land. I remember high school festivals at Rosebud Reservation where we all sang together, but we never talked to each other. Harshness in the weather and the banks made my father go bankrupt and die at 54. Turned my mother into a sergeant trying to tame the dust, keep that heat out or keep the heat in, and find time to prune her roses and give us piano lessons. She had 1,000 ways to overcook beef with potatoes, snap beans, corn husked fresh from the field, tuna fish and potato chip casseroles, and sugar, lots of sugar. Kids, lots of kids, wearing hand-me-downs, doing chores, or sitting perfectly still on the porch, riding the glider, watching lightning. Hot, humid summers carrying those heavy irrigation pipes through the corn, or swimming naked in the lake with nobody else to ripple the water. And then in the winter, when the heat would go off, we'd sleep down in the pine-walled basement, all six of us, sideways in one lumpy roll-away bed, staring into the fire. When the wood was gone, all the neighbors would meet up at the one-room country schoolhouse with kindergarten tables for beds and the coal stove steaming, talking story. I never missed the plains till I was riding through there when I was about 35 years old, and I realized I love this land. You laugh when I say that, about these flat corn fields, the endless squares of crops growing, the cows standing. The men in their silage-smelling bib overalls with their big heavy shoes sucking their teeth, big chests, red faces, rough hands. and the women in their plain cotton print dresses with children hanging off them, busy with their hands all the time. Big hands, plain hair, plain features.
And that's Love of the Land, Rhiannon. And our guest this morning is Christopher Zarkey. And those flat plains and the corn. Mm-hmm. And were you towards southern Minnesota or northern Minnesota?
So it's northern Minnesota. Okay. So I saw the plains, but I also saw the huge Norway pines. Yep. I was near the headwaters of the Mississippi.
Yeah. Wow. It's beautiful. So tell me, what brought you to here? I've already know some of you're at St. John's, and right, you're at Cayuga Medical Center, and Edie Regan, who's at Hospice Care, and was at Cornell at one point, and at Catholic Charities, and is, you know, mm-hmm, Longview. These are all peoples and connections you have here, but what brought you here?
Right. In 1987, I was living in Washington, D.C. I was there for 4 years. I'll talk about this more later on. I was working for a pediatric AIDS program. And by that time, Edie was a campus minister at Cornell. And I used to take Greyhound up here and visit her, and we go hiking in the state parks. And I fell in love with this area. Mm-hmm. And I remember back in 1991 visiting and saying, I really want to live here someday. Mm-hmm. And I had this incredible God experience as I was graduating from seminary. The position opened up at Cayuga Medical Center and applied for it, and graduated from seminary on May 13th, and I was living here on June 21st.
Wow. That sounds, that's quite a story. And it's, you know, there are lots of people who are drawn here, mm-hmm, and they come by hook or by crook or by connections or whatever, just to find a place here. Mm-hmm. So good. Now, tell me about, you alluded to pediatric AIDS, mm-hmm, and working with that. So that's an issue that has been part of your life that you care about.
Right.
Want to say more about your work with persons with HIV AIDS.
Right. When I finished college, I knew that I needed to broaden my experience from living in Minnesota. So I entered the Lutheran Volunteer Corps and began working for an organization that ministered with homeless and low-income people in the inner city. And that was 1987, and I was finding a lot of the people that were coming through the doors were people that had HIV and AIDS. Mm-hmm. Homeless people, where there was very little outreach and treatment.
Right.
I remember experiences of a coworker seeing a used needle on the restroom floor that she picked up with her bare hands and put into a plastic bag. So I ended up going down to the local clinic and said, okay, how do I educate the rest of the staff about precautions? How do we start sharing information with clients?
Right.
So that volunteer experience was a one-year experience, and one of the board members was the founder of the Pediatric AIDS Program through the Episcopal Church, and she asked me to work with them, which I did for the next 3 years. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I was working primarily with single women with AIDS that had an infant with AIDS, and there was usually an older sibling who did not have HIV.
Right.
So our program was a program of training volunteers to provide support to the families, so to keep them intact as long as possible, so mm-hmm, older mm-hmm. children wouldn't end up prematurely in foster care. Part of the joy of that experience was we did lots of celebrations throughout the year. We'd have these huge celebrations for Halloween, Thanksgiving, mm-hmm, Christmas, mm-hmm. Valentine's Day, and took lots of pictures. And part of the goal with that is to create a lot of memories for the older siblings who their father had already left the scene. They were going to eventually lose their mother and their younger sibling. Mm-hmm. But, you know, hopefully these kids who are now in their 30s are going to have some of those photographs and some of those memories of their family.
Yeah, those are powerful moments. Mm-hmm. And how did you, I mean, it makes sense in the middle of it, but I don't know if people realize just quite how important it is to celebrate every possible moment when you're living under that kind of stress.
Oh, it was so absolutely necessary. Yeah. I mean, I remember the experiences of going to 3 infants' funerals in 1 week, and at the end of the week, we went to the wedding of one of the mothers, and
Wow.
We absolutely had to celebrate those moments because there had been just so much devastation the other days.
Right. I had experience with HIV/AIDS in Lenox Hill Hospital in New York in 1984, mm-hmm. and then in Columbia Presbytery in 85 through mm-hmm. 87, 88. One of the most touching moments was when a woman with two small children died of AIDS, and her mother came in with the two small children, and they all laid in bed and cuddled with her after she had died and said goodbye and took the time they needed to do that because they knew it was going to happen.
Right, right.
And they were sad, but they were not in that moment ashamed. Mm-hmm. And because it was a place where they could do that
right.
with some safety.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So what issues are holding you? Okay, actually, you brought a song that was by Holly Near, mm-hmm. But we couldn't find that version, so we have Michael Callen
great.
On They Are Falling All Around Me. Do you want to say something about what you've learned in this work with HIV/AIDS, or do you want to speak to it after the song?
I'll speak to that afterwards.
Okay, very good.
They are falling all around me. They are falling all around me. They are falling all around me. The strongest leaves of my tree.
Every paper brings the news that
every paper brings the news that every paper brings the news that the teachers of my life death comes and rests so heavy. Death comes and rests so heavy. Your face I'll never see. I'll never see you anymore. But I'm not real. I'm not really gonna leave you. You're not really gonna leave me.
It is your path I walk. It is your song I sing. It is your load I take on. It is your air I breathe. It's the record you set that makes me go on. It's your strength that helps me stand. You're not really,
you're not really gonna leave me.
Sing my song right. I have tried to sing my song right. I have tried to sing my song right. Be sure to let me
"They Are Falling All Around Me," a Holly Near song sung by Michael Callan. And our guest on this hour is Christopher Zarkey.
I just want to say a little bit about Michael Callan. Michael Callan was one of the early AIDS activists. He was born in 1955. He died of AIDS complications in 1993 at the age of 38. And it's good to hear his voice because it reminds me of all the voices from that era that we don't have that are gone from us so prematurely.
Right. And they were the activists and the leaders who were far enough along in the disease process before there were any treatments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, during that time I remember people being diagnosed and usually dying within about 6 months.
Right. And we are tempted to forget that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're tempted to forget a whole lot of stuff when it comes to the epidemic.
Right.
Which still, it's slowed down a lot, but it's still an increasing phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
How has it changed your life to work with people who have HIV/AIDS?
I don't take anything for granted in life. I embrace moments of celebration, as you were alluding to or speaking to. I have such an appreciation for what a gift that life is, and also the sacredness of being with someone in the dying process and at the end of the life.
Mm-hmm. How does it change the way in which you greet and meet and engage other people? Because
I have a lot more openness when I meet people. I love to be open to their story and hearing about their journey and about sharing my own. I don't want to waste energy in holding grudges or ruminating too much on negativity from the past, but about meeting one another here and looking at creating future, however long that future is.
Or waste time on small talk.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think the hardest thing for me working in the emergency room, working with persons with HIV or end-stage cancer, was that I just have almost zero tolerance for bullshit conversations, and that was hard on my. I mean, I'm not the most socially adept person at times, and that was made it even harder, you know, in terms of some because I tend to be focused, and that can get in the way. But you know, when there's so much of value
around.
And it's just waiting to be heard or said, How have you? You're about 50.
Yep, I'll be 50 this summer.
And how have you changed across this trajectory of kind of an isolated, rural, poor, you know, community boy who's lived in some major cities and done some work on the major health issues of our times? Mm-hmm. How have you changed? What continues and what has changed?
I look back at my 20s and I was much more serious than I am now because most of my peers and friends were dying.
Mm-hmm.
I knew 400 people who died of HIV complications by the time I was 31. And as I get older, I'm still very, very engaged in issues that are important to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I embrace joy and happiness much more frequently.
Right.
Because sometimes those moments are fleeting and I want to make the most of them. And that's why I'm out in nature as much as possible.
Right.
Right.
And also what I'm hearing kind of implicit in what you're saying is that when you accept a tragedy, you can, you know, wail with honesty, mm-hmm. and you can also laugh at the absurdity with the dark gallows humor.
Right.
And you are fully in the moment. But when you feel like you have to fix it or that it ought to be different, then you're not with the person. You're mm-hmm. not even with yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's so typical of young 20-somethings, you know.
Right.
And that point of growing up, so you mm-hmm. can just be in it. But being in it doesn't justify it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All it does is validate it.
Mm-hmm. And another thing that's changed for me is having more of an appreciation for my background than I had for a long time. And the Rhiannon song speaks to that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I spent a lot of years really wanting to move beyond my background and being upset and bitter about some of those things. And as I get older...
How did it stay... I mean, I have this vision of what was that famous movie... set in South America, where the former conquistador is dragging his weapons up the mountaintop to do penance
for the
mission.
Yes.
Know, I have this vision of you carrying your past like something that's dragging you
back when
you say that. So,
well, that's a great image, and I love that movie.
So how did it how did it cling to you? How did you let it cling to you as a burden?
Yeah, it just weighed me down, and I let too much of that define me. But one of my other hobbies is genealogy.
Uh-huh.
So I had 5 years that I spent a lot of time at the Minnesota History Center in St. Paul, Minnesota, going through the microfilm of the small town newspapers and reading the social columns of my family from the 1890s, 1900, 1920s, mm-hmm. and seeing how they were involved with each other, how they supported one another, who was involved with helping with the harvest, who never showed up to help, who moved in, which aunt moved into the house to take care of the kids when the mother was sick.
Right.
And then learning to really have an appreciation for community and support that was happening within, you know, branches of my family, and realizing it wasn't all about being narrowly defined by particular roles or whatever, that there was a richness that I can really appreciate and embrace.
Wow.
So I can let go of the things that I was dragging up the mountain and hold on to some really, really positive things.
Right. And we wear the scars of things that hurt us,
mm-hmm.
that cut us deeply, but we don't have to keep the wound open.
Right.
And so we also have the muscle and the strength of those challenges and mm-hmm. the example of the people that went before us.
Right. And we both see that at the medical center
because
I don't know if you've shared on air about your role as
Oh yeah, yeah, no, no. Yeah. I'm a volunteer chaplain on every other Monday night. I'm on call and called occasionally, but yeah. Yeah, no, we still see it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And when you look at people with an eye towards seeing, I'm not just looking at you, I'm looking at 5-10 generations of people who helped contribute to who you are, mm-hmm. as well as all the people who cared for them or hurt them or whatever along mm-hmm. the way. And I'm seeing the trajectory in this moment of where you're headed and where the next generations of people, if they're not your descendants, but people who you will have touched.
Mm-hmm.
And this is back to your song, one of your earlier songs, you know, the Fred Small song, you know, what have you left behind?
Right.
Yeah. And as a chaplain, when you look at people, you are totally immersed in the crisis of the moment. But if as kind of a matter of taking stock
mm-hmm.
perspective, you can see this, then I think it makes you more effective in the moment.
Right.
And actually, many times, one of the tragedies of our emphasis on nuclear family, no culture in history has tried to build a society on the nuclear family.
Mm-hmm.
Only Europe and the U.S. And it's bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't
because
work.
you need 30 to 70 people in any one of your lives,
mm-hmm.
in any one of our lives, in order to have the stability of relationships that get us through the hard times. And what we lose are people in that situation who can take on the bigger picture. and help us to appreciate when we're stuck in a crisis, but to get out of it, but to figure a way, to a strategy for living through it, not to deny it, but to but to deal with it,
right,
move on.
Right.
I'm preaching. Sorry. I'm also an ordained minister, too, so it comes through. It comes through. What do you do when you need to work with people who are not like you, whose values may be completely at odds with your own? How do you engage them?
Well, I think back to my 20s. At times was pretty strident. I was too often would sum up people based on their political party or their religious beliefs or whatever. And I've learned to have more openness. I don't have to define people by those labels. I can meet them where they're at.
You can acknowledge the position without having to.
Right. I don't have to change them. I don't have to shut them off.
And how has your sense of integrity changed with time? The reason I'm asking it this way is it's implicit in what you've said, and it's often implicit. But I think Americans in particular, particularly religious folk, have a hard... we often define something as having integrity far too narrowly. As a consequence, we both appear and are rigid. And so how has your sense of integrity changed?
Well, part of my story is in my 30s, I entered a Benedictine monastery in central Minnesota.
Wow.
A monastery that had about 200 monks. The oldest was 103 at that time. And my religious views were still pretty pretty traditional in terms of Catholicism. This was after I'd worked in AIDS ministry.
And for a Lutheran agency.
But my integrity was really challenged because during the time I was at the monastery, the sexual abuse in the Catholic Church was blowing up in Boston, which ended up focusing attention on my monastery in central Minnesota. And what I was learning at that time is there were at least 16 perpetrators of sexual abuse. So it was this huge crisis of faith, of having committed to this religious path and this community and wanting to remain committed to that, but seeing a lack of integrity with that community's history and how they were responding to it. Publicly, the monastery was saying all the right things, but behind closed doors in our community meetings, the monks felt that they were being victimized by the media and by attorneys and really lacking the amount of compassion that was needed for the folks that had been perpetrated upon.
Right.
So part of my integrity meant having to leave that community and trying to figure out my path outside of that structure.
Right. Without excusing what they did.
Right.
We tend to ally ourselves with victims or with victimizers because we cannot ally ourselves with suffering and not succumb to it. And the only way we can change it, from my point of view, is to be unashamed of being in the middle of it. And if they wouldn't let you be both with the victimized and the perpetrators, then they were ashamed.
And
in that sense, we need to be shameless if we're going to change anything.
Right.
Can we segue now to Holy Now?
Yes.
I think that maybe makes a logical move. This is a Peter Mayer performing Holy Now.
When I was a boy each week, on Sunday we would go to church, pay attention to the priest, and he would read the holy word, and
consecrate the holy bread, and everyone would kneel and bow. Today the only difference is everything is holy now. Everything, everything, everything is holy now. When I was in Sunday school, we would learn about the time Moses split the sea in two, Jesus made the water wine. And I remember feeling sad, miracles don't happen still. Now I can't keep track, cause everything's a miracle. Everything, everything, everything's a miracle. Wine from water is not so small, but an even better magic trick is that anything is here at all. So challenging thing becomes miracles, but finding where there isn't one. When holy water was rare at best, barely wet my fingertips, but now I have to hold my breath like I'm swimming in a sea of it. It used to be a world half there, heaven's second rain hand me down. I walk with the reverend there, cause everything is holy now. A scripture verse, it made me want to bow my head. I remember when church let out, how things have changed since then. Everything is holy now. It used to be a world half there, heaven's second rate hand me down, but I walk it with a reverent air. Everything is holy now.
Everything is holy now by Peter Mayer. Peter Mayer. Our guest this hour is Christopher Zarkey. Christopher, tell me a little bit about what this song is for you.
Well, I love this song because I grew up Catholic in a tradition where there are seven sacraments. I'm now an Episcopal priest in a tradition that has seven sacraments. And as when I've studied the sacraments, what I've learned is those grew up in the church out of traditions that people were discovering. It was ways that people were feeling close to God. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And as I get older, I realize that there's so much in life that's sacramental that isn't necessarily recognized by the church. Mm. So we have experiences of washing the feet that's sometimes used in church traditions. It's not considered sacrament.
Right, right.
But it is very sacramental.
Right.
And at the hospital, I see nurses who are washing someone's feet, and I believe that is sacrament when that's mm-hmm, happening. Mm-hmm. When someone gives change to someone who's homeless on the street, I believe that's sacrament. Mm-hmm. When I'm at Tegannock Falls and take a moment and look at the falls, that's sacrament. God's mm-hmm. there.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I want to do on this show is, and for some people it's obvious, but for others who have had a really bad experience of religion, to describe everything as sacrament can be a little mm-hmm. threatening and off-putting. Mm-hmm. But to put it in other language and language that we need, that we speak
right.
too, it's
right.
it's when you do something that makes the suffering of the world slightly less, mm-hmm. you make it a little more whole.
Right.
And that is a sacrament.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to buy into the funky language or to the mystical thinking or magical thinking. Mm-hmm. If you just do something with the intention of bringing a little joy, bringing a little less suffering, mm-hmm. then you've mm-hmm. done a sacrament.
Right, right.
So, how are you? In a certain sense, how are you surprised? And you've already answered it to some extent by how you see sacrament happening. That mm-hmm. you know, but how what surprises you these days? What catches your attention that you hadn't noticed in recent years?
I'm surprised how each decade of my life has new adventures, how new mm-hmm. things mm-hmm. open up. There was a time when I thought that by the time I was 30, I'd pretty much know what the path of my life was going to be, and I would just stay that course.
Right.
And that hasn't been the case.
Right.
You know, I worked as a massage therapist for 14 years, including at a hospital cancer center, and the conversations I had then ended up leading me into seminary. And
wow.
So, you know, here I am, you know, approaching 50, living in a new area of the country, which I absolutely love, having new experiences, living in a smaller community than I've lived in 20-some years. And
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, everything wow. captures my attention right now.
Wow. The best piece of advice at my ordination came from the guy who invented color instant photographs for Polaroid. He's a scientist, but he's also an elder in this Disciples congregation in New York City. And he said, you need to know what I have learned is that every 10 years, I cannot remember what I was worrying about 10 years ago, because it just doesn't matter anymore.
Right.
And
right.
I have changed. And you have to live with the knowledge that life is going to change, and be prepared to not worry about what you're worrying about today.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, it was. It was incredibly powerful.
Yeah.
Let's go to this song by Breath. Okay.
Great.
And that way we can continue our conversation and still get in the last of your songs.
Okay. Great.
And this is composed and performed by Sarah Thompson.
By breath, by blood, by body, by spirit, we are all one. By breath, by blood, by body, by spirit, we are all one. The air that is my breath is the air you are breathing, and the air that is your breath is the air that I am breathing. The wind rising in my breast is the wind from the east, from the west, from the north, from the south, breathing in, breathing out. By breath, by blood, by body, by spirit, are all one. rising steam, rushing the river, running stream. By breath, by blood, by body, by spirit, we are all one. By breath, by blood, by body, by spirit, we are all one. The earth is dust, the earth is clay, flowers blossoming and fading. We are dust, we are clay, we are blossoming and fading. Every color, every sound, every place is holy ground. Oh, every living thing, can you hear it laugh? Can you hear it sing? By breath, by blood, by body, by spirit, we are all one. By breath, by blood, by body, by spirit, we are all one. The fire in my heart, my soul, like the moon, like the Holy One. By breath, by blood, by body, by spirit, we are all one. By breath, by blood, by body, by spirit, we are all.
And that was Sarah Thompson performing By Breath. And our guest is Christopher Zarkey. And Christopher, the last segment of this show I generally devote to talking with people about what they do to restore themselves, their sense of balance or optimism or strength or their just readiness to deal mm-hmm, with the world, mm-hmm. what some might call an attitude adjustment, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. or what do you do on a daily basis or weekly basis? And we'll ask a few more questions about how you've come to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, by nature, I'm an introvert.
Yep.
And my role in the church forces me to be very extroverted.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Being at the medical center, I need to extend myself among a lot of people.
Right.
And for introverts, we tend to absorb energy from other people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And for me, it's just essential to really unplug at times, to have moments of solitude. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm out in nature a lot, as mm-hmm. much as possible. One of the things I also like to do is to take retreat time where I'm unplugged from technology.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And a few months ago, before I was ordained to the priesthood, I went to Mount Savior Monastery near Elmira and spent 72 hours there following the rhythm of the prayer of that community, not having a phone, not having a computer. Mm-hmm. It was the weather was pretty intense. There was a lot of snow. It was pretty cold, but still being outside and just feeling that chill.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty wonderful. And it was also great being able to be in a monastic situation again,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
feeling at peace with the past, where I, even though the monastery I was at was a different monastery,
right.
It would have been easy for me to get triggered. And I realized that I can really be present. Yeah.
And what I also want listeners to hear that Mount Xavier Monastery is available to anyone who wishes to sign up and go there. And it's used, I participate in a congregation that has Mennonite influence, and people are from this tradition, that tradition, are going there. Mm-hmm. We have all sorts of, they're open to, and they provide varying levels of engagement, I think, depending upon what you want. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, they were very hospitable. I loved it there.
And those resources exist around here in a number of ways, and it's important to look for them. So the walking, the retreat, or shutting off from technology.
Right. I journal to write by hand and not necessarily on a computer. Opens up a different part of my heart and my head.
Mm-hmm. Right. And when do you... do you do this on a daily the walking and the writing on a daily basis, or do you need that kind of discipline, or do you want to feel the need rise and address it when it comes up?
I address the need as it rises. Mm-hmm. There have been times where I felt I needed to be very disciplined about doing particular things on particular days, and now I trust my own rhythm.
And having that kind of daily discipline, why did you choose it, and then how did you discover that you didn't need it? First, why did you choose it, and then how did you discover you didn't need it?
Right. In the past, I chose it because I needed that discipline, because it was either that or doing something that was more mindless than mindful.
Right. So perhaps more self-destructive.
Right. So it was creating this container. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But once the container is created, then a person has the freedom to go beyond the container.
Right, or the strength that held the container together outside of you now holds you together inside.
Yes,
and when you feel it fray, you can mend it yourself.
Right.
Wow, neat. And my guess is, just from the kinds of music and things you've picked, is that you have also... you have connections with music as well, mm-hmm. for your own personal mm-hmm. restoration. Mm-hmm. Do you want to say something about what kinds of music capture you?
What I like is pretty broad, but I'm really drawn to folk music, and part of it is I love being able to meet the artists, and in the folk community, it's very easy to meet artists and interact with them and have meals with them. But I'm not able to have with someone who is a rock musician or
a major classical star.
Right. Good.
It's a homemade life. A homemade life.
Right.
Christopher, it's been great to get to know you.
Well, I appreciate this time, Eric. Thank you.
And the last song we're going to close with is Dan Wilson's Free Life. Do you want to say something on our way out about it?
Just really encourage everyone to embrace the life they have and make the most of it. And the song speaks to that for me, and I want to share that with you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good one.
Thanks.
Let's take a little trip down where we used to go. It's way beyond the strip, a place they call your soul. We'll sit down for a while and let the evening roll. Don't worry about the time, we'll find a place to stay. The people around here seem familiar in some way. Look kinda like we did before we got so cold. And in the air the questions hang, will we get to do something? Who we gonna end up being? How we gonna end up feeling? What you gonna spend your free life on?
as our guide. We'll raise our ready hands and let go for the ride down into unknown lands where lovers needn't hide. We got these lives for free. We don't know where they've been. We don't know where they'll go when we are through with them. The starlight of the sun, the dark side of the moon, and in the air the questions hang. Will we get to do something? Who we gonna end up being? How we gonna end up feeling? What you gonna spend?
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, W201 CD, Lansing.